Hello and welcome to our new season of In Wisconsin. I'm Patty Lowe. This week, Wisconsin shelter from the storm. Meet a family that survived Hurricane Katrina, but now searches long distance for missing loved ones. Discover how Wisconsin coffee lovers directly impact the lives of those who grow these treasured beans. And experience the state's driftless area through the eyes and words of an author, hunter, and fisherman. We'll have all that, plus a trip north for a look at the early fall colors in Wisconsin.
Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who bring safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web. The University of Wisconsin Comprehensive Cancer Center, providing cancer research, education, and treatment. UW Comprehensive Cancer Center, comprehensive as designated by the National Cancer Institute. Information available on the web. Wisconsin's technical colleges, providing local education for the crucial occupations essential to our communities. Wisconsin's technical colleges, communities first.
Flags are flying at half-staff in Wisconsin to honor victims of Hurricane Katrina. But the state's commitment goes beyond symbolic. Wisconsin residents have given millions of dollars to aid in the relief efforts down south. Here in Wisconsin, two planes carrying about 200 evacuees landed in Milwaukee a week ago. They join a smaller number of displaced people who also made their way here. While evacuees are receiving government and charitable services, sometimes it takes the work and heart of a single person to help put the pieces back together. Frederica Freiberg has one such story.
Storm-weary evacuees, some of the last out of New Orleans, landing in Milwaukee after coming through hell and literal high water. The Wisconsin Air National Guard met the FEMA chartered airplane, each soldier assigned to escort passengers in need of care and attention. Among those, Sherianda Brew and her one-year-old baby.
I was touched by her story when she got off the airplane.
It was hurting to know that I didn't know where he was and what his condition was.
For nearly 2 weeks, this mom didn't know the whereabouts of her kindergartner. He'd been visiting his aunt when the hurricane hit. Not until they were on the ground in Milwaukee and using a borrowed cell phone because theirs was ruined in water did parents Sherianda and Quentin make contact with the boy at a shelter in Houston.
I don't know what FEMA's doing to try to make those kinds of reconciliations, but I know this. I've had more offers for people to want to do anything. And if we know where that boy is, I'll tell you there are people in Wisconsin that will drive their cars down to Houston and get him and bring him back.
The Wisconsin Air Guard pilot who escorted the boy's parents off the airplane in Milwaukee did one better. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Pellegrin, who's also a commercial pilot, quickly arranged for the little boy, his two aunts, and a baby cousin to fly out of Houston. Within 2 days, the family was together, staying at the Red Cross shelter in Milwaukee.
And he said that he was going to find them for us and get them.
And what happened?
He did.
These people actually care more than my mind could comprehend that they do.
The little boy, 5-year-old Brian, runs and plays in safety now. But the day after Katrina hit, his 19-year-old aunt had to take his survival into her own hands. Little Brian was at her house when the storm came. She also had her own toddler and her 14-year-old sister in her care. The young survivors trudged through rapidly rising water to the Superdome.
First thing came through my mind when I hit the water. As soon as I stepped in the water, I said, we're gonna die.
Sherika Brew says if getting there was bad, the Superdome was worse. For days, she says she didn't sleep so she could keep a watchful eye on the children. But she wasn't sleeping, she says, for another reason. She had lost touch with her own 7-month-old baby in the hurricane. The baby evacuated somewhere with his father.
I miss him. That's all I can think about.
And still, there was another void for this family. They were also separated from their matriarch. The children's grandmother was evacuated to a shelter in northeastern Louisiana without much hope of getting out.
Okay, that's what we're working on now. We're just trying to find out where you're at exactly.
Lieutenant Colonel Pellegrin didn't stop with retrieving the five-year-old. In short order, he was on the horn with the boy's grandma, working to get her out of Monroe, Louisiana, and into Milwaukee.
I never thought that I would be personally involved one-on-one with a family, and it feels very good, and I'm glad that we took the time to get involved, and I'd like I said, to complete this one and make sure that we get her mom up here, and then I know there's a seven-month-old out there that we're still trying to track down. So
you're not going to stop, are you?
No, not until they're together.
Oh, I don't know, ma'am. Right now, we're...
Less than 48 hours after tracking down the grandma, the man on a personal rescue mission delivered again. Pellegrin made some complicated arrangements to fly her into Milwaukee. After being separated by the winds and water of Katrina, one man made it his job one to put this family back together, a family that a week ago he didn't know existed. Just one last personal mission between Lieutenant Colonel Pellegrin and this New Orleans family remains. He's now out to reunite this young mother with her baby.
Lieutenant Colonel Pellegrin also flew resupply missions into New Orleans over the Labor Day weekend. As for the family he worked to reunite, they plan to make Milwaukee home. You can find links to more information about Hurricane Katrina relief efforts by logging onto our website at wpt.org/inWisconsin. Those who are new to Wisconsin soon learn what many of us already know. Wisconsin is rich with a diversity of places to live. One longtime resident, author John Motovilov, makes his home in the Driftless area. That's the southwestern part of our state where rolling hills and valleys were not flattened by glaciers. Motovilov is also an avid hunter and fisherman. His writing celebrates how those pastimes connect him with the land.
There is quite literally no separation between woods and water. I've really never been to another place like it.
Come on, girl.
I haven't found anything that compares to it in beauty or diversity. I mean, it sort of has a gnarly, craggy sort of feel with lots of little valleys and lots of secret hidden little places. It's stunning. It's stunning. I've
really Some call been. It the Driftless area. That large chunk of southwestern Wisconsin, a place of woods and water, where the Kickapoo River snakes through.
Okay, what is it? Go on, Tashi.
A place of rolling hills.
Maybe onto a bird, I don't know. She's getting...
And deep valleys, the part of the state that escaped those steam-rolling glaciers thousands of years ago. Hunter, angler, and rider, John Motovilov.
The Driftless area, there's no continuous, unbroken expanse of either, you know, water or woods or sky or even farms. Everything is sort of on a small, somewhat broken up scale. Patchwork of hills and farms, creeks and rivers. And there's always this feeling that there's kind of cover. There's some place to, you know, take refuge. That sense of secrecy, and then tied to that sense of discovering all these secret things, you know, whether they're trout streams or little cabins, or it's full of secrets, I think, full of secrets waiting to be discovered.
Wonderful call again. There was a barred owl calling.
It's a very rich kind of area, very rich in fish and game and flora and fauna.
It was the wildlife, the hunting, the fishing that called to him, that helped shape his connection to this place.
And in a wet year, this would likely have water standing in it, so there'd be, you know, the possibility of ducks jumping up all around us.
I think it's my place, you know, I really do. You know, I like to go up north and I sort of like that piney birch landscape, but it doesn't weigh on me in the way that this landscape weighs on me. This sort of very, very unique mix of woods and waters.
The way a landscape touches you. Hunting and fishing are avocations. Motovilov makes his living as a writer. So when this wordsmith, who penned the nearly 500-page tome, The Fly Fisher's Guide to Wisconsin, found himself pulled in by the Driftless area, he and his wife bought a cabin here. And from the time spent soaking up this landscape, emerged a collection of essays, Driftless Stories, all about hunting, fishing, and their cabin. And places nearby.
The place is Gaze Mills. Its apples won first prize in the 1905 State Fair, and by 1911, the State Horticultural Society was urging large-scale production. 90 years later, one can see they were right. Fist-sized apples hang from the trees in September, and now this hill country produces apples of national repute. Like a model village, visible from the scenic overlook, Gaze Mills spreads out below. River, Main Street, steeples, butcher, barber, tavern, gas station, a town plainly made.
A town plainly made. Not far from the Motovilov cabin, also plainly made.
No one is going to call this a second home. I'd like to think that it's a step above a shack. Kind of inching toward cabin. We don't have any electricity at all, or water for that matter. It's kind of beautiful in a rough kind of way, I guess, a diamond in the rough. Come on, girl.
Really rough.
We are gonna fix this siding. And it looks like heck, but basically what we're trying to do is keep animals from getting underneath the porch. So we had a squirrel and a mink that ended a game of chase in the cabin, and we came back to find the results of it. And it was, I'll tell you, it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever smelled. A proper door needs to be built here, but in lieu of that, if I don't get to it this winter, this, I guess, will do.
But in other ways, it's perfect.
It doesn't get any better than this. A beer would improve things, but a ham sandwich, the Kickapoo Valley, a fall day and my dog, pretty good.
Mostly it's a place where things move slowly. A down tree limb needs cutting, the porch needs a board, as the rest of the world moves at a pace bent on implosion. It's a refuge, a quiet hole in the woods, but also a getaway.
What do you smell out there? Are birdies out there?
A writer's retreat and a hunter's refuge.
The view makes up for the lack of fine cuisine. But that said, there have been some gourmet meals eaten on this porch, like wood duck cooked in sauerkraut and venison grilled over maple sticks, and trout that have been caught only just a few hours before.
Writing ideas percolate on the back porch.
Let's go hunting, Tasha.
Hunting opportunities beckon from the backyard.
When paddling a skiff or walking in the woods, I find myself asking, where is the spirit of the animal gone? Stone Age man inscribed caves with fears and hopes and dreams of the hunt. Bringing this reverence to the duck marsh and deer woods makes the hunt a richer thing. Over here, girl. Tashi. I remember kneeling in a cornfield and crossing myself after taking my first wood duck. The earth was black and warm. This lovely bird lay beside me. Everything seemed fertile, generous, and good. By asking blessing, you recognize that the animal didn't die in vain, that it lives on in you.
What is it, girl?
Jeez, I mean, that's like a point. This is just an ancient partnership.
Man, and then dog, and then the beasts below them, you know? And it just sort of, the dog is kind of your conduit into that world.
Somehow this element
you know, brings up all like old spirits in this place. Off to the sluice.
The way the spirit of a landscape enters us.
Never thought swamp could smell so good.
The ways we form a connection to a place, to the land.
I'll always come out here as long as I live.
Here's a girl. You silly dog, you got a cattail on your nose.
It's part of me, just the way a bur oak looks, or the way a sunset is out here, or the way a trout stream looks. Those are the kinds of things that I'll think about in my deathbed. And I'll realize in some way I'm taking them with me. They're really the most profound things. And you can own land, but you can't own those sensations. You know, they own you.
In the end, we are all on the same arc. Body and spirit, man and nature dissolve, as Spinoza said, into infinite substance. Rivers are veins, land is the body. And in the gathering dark of harvest, the fate of man and that of wildfowl appear the same, haunting the ends of the earth forever in flight.
John Motovilov has authored several books, including his latest called Wisconsin Wild Foods, 100 Recipes for Badger State Bounties. From creamed coot to stir-fried venison, you'll find it all in this cookbook. Motovilov is currently at work on a novel called Bohemia. Our next story introduces us to some entrepreneurs with a product that some of us just can't start the day without, coffee. In fact, the U.S. consumes 31% of the world's coffee. Even though they have a devoted customer base, the owners of Just Coffee make it their business to also take care of the coffee producers.
Fresh, hot coffee. Many people are passionate about this bitter brew. So passionate, they sit through a lecture to learn more about these magical beans and the people who grow them.
This is one of the farmers at Moot Veets Cooperative in Chiapas. His name is Roman. Please note, Roberto in his Green Bay Packers hat.
Matt Early is on a first-name basis with these farmers. He's a partner in a small coffee roasting company in Madison called Just Coffee. Once a year, they visit the farmers who grow their coffee in Mexico and Guatemala. They've witnessed firsthand how hard it is to grow this crop.
Coffee is such a labor-intensive crop. Arabica coffee, because there's no possible way to pick all the cherries at once. So basically, you're going back over and over again and over the same trees and picking the ripe fruits. This one right here is almost ready to go. You see how red that is? But it's really the only one in this cluster, really on the whole tree, that is ripe for picking. So inevitably, the farmers will have to go over and over the same parts of the grove and individually pick those cherries. They get up before 5 o'clock in the morning and are headed out to the fields, and they don't leave until after the sun is down.
Early tells the audience what life is like for the coffee farmers, both in the fields and at home.
Most of the communities, to varying degrees, are suffering from pretty intense poverty.
Early cares about the people in these communities. In fact, that's why he got involved in the coffee business. In the late 1990s, he and a friend, Mike Moon, traveled to Chiapas, Mexico to work with the indigenous people in this region, the Mayan Indians.
the people in Chiapas are involved in an incredible struggle that's been going on since before 1994. And we are working in communities of the Zapatista movement in Chiapas, which is a movement of opposition to the Mexican government. It's a movement of indigenous people seeking indigenous rights and trying to preserve their traditional, you know, ways and culture.
On their first trip to Chiapas 5 years ago, they met a local man trying to help the farmers by organizing a cooperative.
And he was able to take us to different communities and show us sort of some of the problems going on and talk to us about what they felt like would be a viable path to bringing more funds into the community in order to buy the things that they can't grow.
At that time, the most viable path out of poverty was coffee. The biggest obstacle was finding companies to buy and roast their coffee in America. So Early and Moon went to work. They formed Just Coffee, a company that imports coffee beans. They roast the beans in small batches at very high temperatures.
It's kind of a light roast. We're going to be roasting it to 450 degrees.
Then they bag it up by hand. The coffee arrives at the grocery store in the company's old-fashioned delivery vehicle. The coffee itself is different from most other store brands. It's grown and sold as a part of what's called the fair trade system. Fair trade guarantees farmers long-term contracts and a minimum price per pound. Without the fair trade system, farmers are usually paid 30 to 60 cents per pound. With fair trade, farmers are paid $1.26 per pound for non-organic and $1.41 per pound for organic coffee. Today, most fair trade coffee is organically grown. The fair trade system pays the farmers more by cutting out the middlemen.
It's a great way to help folks stay on their land and to be involved in democratic processes within their communities.
Early and his partners learned recently that the fair trade prices no longer cover the cost of production for the farmers, so they're working to change that for the future.
I think it's important to note that in fair trade, we're not talking about handouts and charity and dropping, you know, money and advisors on people, but we're talking about paying people what they deserve for the hard work that they're doing.
Early is passionate about the people who grow his coffee. That's why he and his partners visit different farm communities in Mexico and Guatemala every year to meet each of the farmers and build personal relationships.
That's what it's all about for us, is the relationship with the people that we work with.
Their most recent visit was not your typical business junket. They traveled to a remote farm community in the back of a pickup truck. Mike Miller is another partner in the Just Coffee company.
This is a picture from the road. This was quite a drive to get out here. This is a very, very isolated community. We drove for probably an hour and a half on barely what could be considered a road at all. I mean, it was windy through these beautiful mountains, scary and treacherous in the back of a pickup truck.
What they saw on this visit was not a surprise. It simply reinforced their determination to help the farmers.
This is the level of poverty that they're dealing with in this community, and you know, it varies from community to community. Sometimes they have nicely planed cut wood on the houses. Sometimes they're made out of cinder block. These folks, I mean, dirt floor, one room,
stick houses,
sticks. And you know, I was surprised that they even had the metal roof. But it's completely open, and it's just devastating.
And also for me personally, it's just like, it helps me come back here and work.
Yes.
I mean, just meeting these people. I have this job here. It provides for my family here. And you know, it's these people's hard work that allows that to happen. Without them, I don't have a job here. And so I just feel like I have to stay connected to them. And meeting them face to face, talking to them, and becoming a part of their community, that allows me to bring that back here with me.
For the partners at Just Coffee, it's not business as usual. It's business with a social conscience. Business that's aiming for a fair trade.
So the coffee is sort of only a vehicle to deepen these relationships. And we all feel like the people down there and all of us at Just Coffee, we feel like this is the kind of enterprise that it's going to take to change the world.
According to Smithsonian Magazine, fair trade coffee sales make up only 0.5% of the U.S.'s $18.5 billion retail coffee market. Here in Wisconsin, there are several options for buying coffee produced under the fair trade system. You can go to our website at wpt.org/inwisconsin to find a list of businesses. You can also simply ask your favorite coffee shop if or to what extent it participates in the fair trade system. That's our program for this week. We leave you with a trip to Little Star Lake in Vilas County. For In Wisconsin, I'm Patty Lowe. See you next week.
Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who bring safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web. The University of Wisconsin Comprehensive Cancer Center, providing cancer research, education, and treatment. UW Comprehensive Cancer Center. Comprehensive as designated by the National Cancer Institute. Information available on the web. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges. Providing the people of Wisconsin with the knowledge and skills they'll need for the economy of tomorrow. Wisconsin's Technical Colleges. Communities first.